Come on.
Good morning. It is 7:31. Calling the council meeting for March 28th to order. And let's see. Someone take and call the roll, please.
Representative Hyman.
Here.
Representative Edmund.
Here.
Representative Guttenberg.
Here.
Representative Millett.
Here.
Representative Ortiz.
Here.
Representative Stukes.
Here.
Representative Brumman. Representative Eastman.
Here.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Kelly. Senator McKinnon.
Here.
Senator Meyer.
Here.
Senator Matickey.
Here.
Senator Stevens.
Here.
Senator Diesel. Vice Chair Stedman.
Here.
Chair Keough.
Here.
12 members,
1 alternate. Down if I need it.
Thank you. 12 members and 1 alternate present. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I think before we get started, there may have been some confusion on making sure that the material was out and available. And I guess what I'd like to do is get feedback from the committee. We've got minutes. We've got the bill packet that was available on the network drive on Friday, but not posted to BASIS or delivered in hard copy until yesterday afternoon. And so I'd like to find out if there are better ways for us to distribute the material. There's one thing we can do is email it out to members. So, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe past practice has been when we send the agenda out, we send the supporting documents with us so that individual offices all aren't digging for the same documents, that if they came in a single email with all the attachments, and preferably a week before the meeting, but certainly at least 24 hours before a meeting.
Okay, certainly we can definitely work on getting that distribution back a little bit more smoothly. So be patient as we transition to the online and electronic documents. So we've been trying to work on that so we save a little bit longer. So we do have an agenda available. We did have an executive session with no specific purpose. As we got through yesterday afternoon, it turned out the executive session was not going to be necessary. So we've removed that from the agenda. So the agenda is the same as was posted, except that the executive session is not going to be happening. So are there any comments about the agenda as presented? No comments, Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, I move Ledge Council approve the agenda's reference without the executive session.
Any comments or objections? No objections. The agenda is approved. We do have, and we've been catching up, so we've got minutes starting back in December. So we've got minutes from December, January, February 9th, and February 15th. Has everyone had adequate time to review the minutes, or do we need to postpone the review of minutes? Looks like we're ready for a motion. Senator Stedman.
I move that the Ledge Council approve the following meeting minutes on December 20th, 2016, January 20th, February 9th, and February 15th, 2017.
Any objections to the motion to say this? No objections. The minutes are approved. Next item on the agenda is ratification of charitable events, and we have the legislative skits, Bowl for Kids' Sake, Kenai River Junior Classic, Kenai River Classic, and Kenai River Women's Classic. Any comments or questions about any of the items on the charitable events list? Seeing none, Senator Stedman.
I move the Legislative Council ratify the chair's sanctioning of the following charitable events for AS 2460-080. Legislative skits, Bowl for Kids' Sake, Kenai River Junior Classic, Kenai River Classic, Kenai River Women's Classic.
Any objection to the motion as stated? Seeing no objection, the charitable events are ratified. We'll move on to contract approvals, and we have the Ombudsman lease renewal. Ms. Strong, can you come forward and talk about that renewal?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Tina Strong. I'm the procurement officer for Legislative Affairs Agency. And the original lease between the Legislative Affairs Agency and JRW Ventures, Windward Town and Country Plaza, for the Ombudsman's Anchorage office space was for 3 years, beginning May 1st, 2013, and terminated April 30th, 2016. There were three renewals of lease available under the lease agreement, each for a one-year period. We have exercised renewal number one that expires on April 30th, 2017. The Office of the Ombudsman would like to proceed with renewal number two for the period May 1st, 2017 through April 30th, 2018. If Legislative Council approves renewal number two, this will leave one more renewal of lease available before we have to go out to bid or do a lease extension. This lease exceeds $35,000 in one fiscal year, therefore your approval is required. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions on the Ombudsman lease renewals? Representative Clayman.
Just to make sure I know, this is what used to be called the Sunshine Plaza across from, or what's the, I guess the post office is in the basement of the building. I just want to make sure I've got the right address when I read 333 West 4th.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Clayman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Senator McKinnon, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering whether in the plans for the new Anchorage LIO, whether we're considering consolidation of leases and whether this would, if we've talked to the Ombudsman to see if it would be an appropriate relocation to that facility to save the state money.
Conversations been had with the Ombudsman about possible relocation to the Anchorage LIO?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I believe so. I have not had those discussions, but I do know in the past that the Ombudsman, OVR, everyone has been, it's been talked about moving into the new LIO, but I do not know the plans at this time.
And Senator, actually, in answer to your question, I think at this point, without the renovations in the Wells Fargo building, we don't have space available for some of those others. But as we go through the renovation process, the thought is to make sure that we keep in mind there are other divisions of the legislature that may need office space. So, follow up.
Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it to your office to look at consolidation and speak with the appropriate executive directors. I know we're in a process of hiring what we have out for solicitation, ombudsman, as well as the Office of Victims' Rights. So any lease space that we can incorporate effectively for the public into the one location would be helpful to centralize some of those services. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Again, Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was exactly my question, and I think we should move as quickly as we can to consolidating office space in Anchorage.
Senator Stevens. Senator Chicky.
Hate to go on and on about this one thing, but actually we were very aggressive on a sort of comprehensive consolidation plan. We were looking at office space, and once we decided on a new LIO location, it seemed like that sort of dropped off. I think it's more important now than ever. So instead of just a one-off, I think we need to evaluate all outstanding office space and see what can be brought into consolidation. And perhaps there may be some that are not appropriate, but I bet they would be few and far between.
Thank you, Senator Mushicki. And one of the things I will put on the record is we do have the third floor office space in the Wells Fargo building that will be coming back to our possession at the end of this year. So there will be more office space available, and we are currently working on office space for interim use within the existing building, utilizing the existing space before we get into discussions of possible office renovations. So we will be considering what is going to be happening with renovations of at least the second and the fourth floor, and then what we're also going to end up doing with the third floor when we retain possession of that space. Any other questions about the Ombudsman? And I guess the other comment I would make is the Ombudsman lease renewal is it's not pulling us in for more than another year. We have a year. We know that at least on the third floor office space of the Legislative Information Office, that's another 8 months of rent that we're receiving, and we will have time to work on trying to incorporate office space for other legislative offices. Any other questions on the Ombudsman's lease renewal? Senator Stedman?
I move Ledge Council approve lease number 2 with JRW Ventures, Windward Town and Country Plaza Incorporated for the time period of May 1st, 2017 through April 30th, 2018, in the amount of $40,905.54.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Not seeing any objections, the Ombudsman lease renewal is approved. Thank you, Ms. Strong. Next item on the agenda is the Stoll Reeves contract amendment, and this is our defense of the 16 West 4th. Mr. Gardner, if you can provide a presentation on where we're at with regard to our payments and obligations for Stoll Reeves.
Good morning, Ledge Council members. For the record, Doug Gardner, Legislative Legal Services. Well, where we are right now is we've got two cases that are being litigated. We've got what I would describe as the old Gottstein case. That was a case that we lost, but it is a case that the court decided, we think, incorrectly. The court said that we did not give us a laches defense, and our position is that the court can't have it both ways and say that we weren't entitled to a laches defense. A laches defense basically is that you can't delay bringing a claim against somebody like Mr. Gottstein did and expose us to significant financial harm. Well, the court said there wasn't any harm, and now here we are being sued for $37 million. So we're trying to straighten that out. We're asking the court to consolidate that issue along with the appeal that the appeal of Senator Stevens's decision in the procurement case. So that briefing will be all complete probably here probably by Monday. We've got 716 has appealed Senator Stevens' decision, which was ultimately affirmed by this committee. And so we've got litigation going in two different cases. I think we're getting to a place here where we're going to have to start making some pretty serious evaluations about how things move forward, and I think there'll be a point here where I hope to get into an executive session and discuss some risk assessments and evaluations with you. There's probably a fork in the road coming within the next month, I would say. But right now, we owe Stoll the amounts that I've discussed in the memo. One of the comfort levels that I haven't had, and I just want to, you know, throw this bluntly out to council is that I've essentially been coming back to council repeatedly saying, here's how much we need to fill the pot, but I've already spent the money, and I've already signed off on the bills before you've authorized it. Now, it hasn't been an inefficient way of doing business. I'm being careful. I've negotiated reductions in those bills where appropriate, but I'd like to kind of right the ship and get back to a position where you've already authorized things before I come to you with a bill that's a fait accompli, which is part of what this is. $150,000 is what I've been asking for. It's kind of a pay-as-you-go concept, but again, it's not something. It's hard to always stay up when we don't have Ledge Council meetings that are, you know, in sync with the litigation. So if you're comfortable authorizing the 150, that's fine. I can refine a different number down the road if you would like. But basically, this dollar amount probably gets us even with the water line. We had a couple of bills come in yesterday, which I haven't processed with Ms. Lash. And so anyway, that's what we need to pay the bills. But I would like an opportunity, Representative Keto, to talk to council, I think probably sometime in the next month here, about sort of an overall risk assessment and bring you up to speed in a confidential environment. This isn't the place to do that with the reporter sitting here. So, but that's what it's going to take to pay the bills right now.
Any questions? Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gardner, I'm just not familiar. Is Joel the legal name of Mr. Gottstein? I had heard a different first name. So on the second paragraph, third line, halfway in, we refer to a file by Joel Gottstein, and it's just not familiar to me as far as the first name goes.
That's incorrect. That's incorrect. I did that quickly, and yeah, it's Jim.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? I will, and I guess I do know that it seems as though we've been paying as we go, and I know there's no way to anticipate what future needs are. To date, we've spent, I think with this, we'll be up to about $500,000 for this case. If you're saying that gets us to about even, do you have an idea of what we might expect for the next 6 months on responding to these lawsuits?
And, Chairman Quito, I think that what would be the most useful thing is, you know, we've been down this road a couple of times, Stoll and I have, about trying to come up with budgets, and we've had some internal budgets that haven't reflected what has actually happened. So it's very difficult to budget, but I could come up with something that is probably a little on the heavier side in terms of, okay, this amount certainly will cover it, and then I could come to you with that perhaps at the next meeting. But, you know,
I guess from my perspective, it would be good to try and see if we can get ahead a little bit and try and anticipate, even if we're not completely accurate, if we can get an idea of what we're looking at for future expenses and then try and match that to what we expect. And if we can have conversations outside of here, maybe we can do something at our next meeting, executive session as well. And I guess for you and for other members of the committee, I would like to say we will be planning on having another meeting before we exit session. So that will be one of the items that we will put on the calendar. We will put an executive session in for a briefing on that. And we'll, I think if it happens in the next 2.5 weeks or so, you'd be available and ready for that discussion, or is that discussion not quite ready?
I'll be ready for that discussion.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Senator Stone.
I move Ledge Council approve the amendment to the Stoll's Rivers contract in the amount of $150,000.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing no objections, the contract amendment is approved for $150,000. Next item on the agenda is Wells Fargo Resolution Recovery Plan approval. And it is an amendment to our lease with Wells Fargo at 1500 West Benson Boulevard. Terry Bannister with Legal Services can present and answer any questions. So Ms. Bannister is on her way forward.
For the record, I'm Teresa Bannister with the Division of Legal and Research Services. Wells Fargo recently sent, who is one of our, is a lessee of the Benson Building, sent us a proposed change to our lease, their lease with us, and it was to accommodate their need to establish, to comply with some federal requirements. The FDIC requires that some large bank holding companies and some other financial institutions establish a resolution plan on how they're going to handle all their affairs when they are, if they should ever go into financial distress, bankruptcy, whatever. And so to comply with some kind of plan, they sent this this proposed amendment to their lease. And the two goals, the plan, FDIC requires that they achieve two goals. One is to, well, I won't go into the goals, but we received the proposed change to the lease, and we have made it clearer and tightened it up. It was a little bit too broad and reclaimed a few rights that we felt that we had, and also tried to accommodate their needs in this situation. And so we proposed to them our version of their amendment, and they have accepted that. And that is what is in front of you today. Basically, it will give them, we cannot, if they go into financial distress, we cannot just automatically hold them in default for that. But they can stay if they pay their rent and keep up the premises and comply with the rest of the lease. And also, if in this whole resolution of like a bankruptcy, if they had an affiliate who was going to take over the lease, we said, okay, you know, that's fine. The lease is ongoing. There are a few other provisions in here, but I have reviewed it, and I think it accomplishes what they were trying to do with Ed, but we put back in, tried to narrow it and make it, put back in some of our rights. And they've accepted it.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Bannister?
No.
Senator Machicki, and then Senator Stevens.
Thank you. In section 19.5, I have seen 18 months in other resolution event language. What I haven't seen is the prevention of renewal of the lease. Is that typical? I understand and support not terminating the lease, but preventing renewal, we may have other plans for that space at some point in the future. So,
well, there is no requirement. There's no set form for this. They have sent out, so there's no precedent for what they would put in here. You can have whatever you want in here at the, if they, you know, if they're agreeable to it. And the, so whatever the committee would want to do, it would seem that, as I looked at it, it would seem that it's good to have a client in there, a tenant in there. But that's right. We have done this with renewal. It would not extend past any right to renew. It's in this that would not, the lease would not extend beyond that.
It's my only concern in what I've reviewed in this document, Mr. Chairman, is we don't know what the future brings. I don't see clarity that it says that we would not be required to renew.
You don't see clearly. Oh, no, they can renew. One of the background aspects of this is that if they go into bankruptcy, the FDIC pretty much takes over and says, you do this, you do that. And we don't have many rights at that point. And so if that's any consideration for you to look at, to consider, I don't know. So it was thought to put it in, well, anyway.
Senator Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, this may not be the appropriate time. It's a little tangential, but as you may know, there was extensive damage done to the building, writing on the walls, and we were all here in Juneau, so it can't be us. So somebody did graffiti, and this may not be the right place to talk about, but it is concerning the responsibility of Wells Fargo to keep up the premises. Could we at some point talk about that, or are you aware of that damage that occurred? And my question is, who's responsible? Who's responsible for cleaning up that graffiti?
Senator Stevens, I am aware, and we can bring Ms. Varney up, and I think it's a little tangential, but we can squeeze that in after this item, perhaps for a report on the LIO, since we are there. Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page one of the amendment of the lease, under item one, and then in parentheses, II2. It's the last paragraph on the page. Can you talk to us? It's when the if there was, if you look at the letter from Wells Fargo, for me, understanding what's before us is that this modifies our lease to incorporate terms precluding the automatic termination of a lease in case of insolvency. And so when I look at 1II, it talks about non-payment. So could you tell me the states, it seems like it doesn't matter whether we get paid, we're still allowing a tenant who's not paying that's insolvent to stay in the building. How's the state protected as far as eviction if we're not receiving payments?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon. They are obligated under this when they're in there, if they have an event that occurs, to pay the rent and to comply with the other obligations of the lease. Now, what the FDIC would do at that point, I don't know. You know, they have quite a bit of power when they take over. But they want to keep them operating, usually, the federal organization does, commission does. There is one point that if they had requested that if there have been some defaults before the time of the resolution, those will might wait until after the resolution that's in here. Those can wait until after the resolution.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, yes.
I'll just read it into the record. What's presented to council today is for a failure or delay by the tenant or a tenant's affiliate to make a payment or perform an obligation under the lease that accrued or was due before the commencement of the resolution event. If the failure or delay is cured within a reasonable period of time following the commencement of the resolution. So we don't really outline what a reasonable amount of time is. Is it 18 months, as in two paragraphs up, that we might be holding a lease? It's a bank. It's Wells Fargo. It's a remote possibility. From my perspective of insolvency, I just was wondering how our attorneys were protecting the state in the event that there was insolvency and an expectation of rental payment.
So, Ms. Bannister, do we have a sense for what would be a reasonable amount of time that we would consider waiting for failure of payment?
Mr. Chairman, I cannot give you an estimate of what would be a reasonable amount of time. This is all very hypothetical. I don't know what will be going on at that point. If they have a bankruptcy, then they will be in bankruptcy, and there would be a certain amount of time taken up with that. I can't tell you what would be a reasonable amount of time. Reasonable is a good term. A court would interpret it, but on the other hand, it's not fixed.
Senator McKinnon? Well, thank you. And I do agree that it opens things up for us a little bit. I think this is a provision we put in for a very remote possibility. But it does seem as though what FDIC is looking for is that some sense of continuity, so that if there is a failure of the corporation, that they would not immediately be evicted from our property. Mm-hmm. So this is, I guess, from my perspective, a question for you, Ms. Bannister. Is this a little bit more of a technical change to the lease, or is it a fairly substantive change to the lease that we had had before?
Mr. Chairman, this is a significant change, but it's a significant change if they were to go into bankruptcy. But it's not likely, but it could happen. And it's a narrow area. If they do go into bankruptcy, we have put in here that they can stay in there and have the renewal and do whatever if they keep paying the rent and keep the premises up and otherwise comply with the lease.
Thank you, Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was mentioned that this amendment was tightened up.
Mm-hmm.
In what capacity was it tightened up?
First of all, it was through the chair, Representative Stutes. First of all, it was very unclear. I couldn't understand what they were saying. And I didn't want us to sign off on something that was so garbled. So I tried to clear it up, and I put in that they had to comply with all the provisions of our lease if they want to stay. They didn't. They kind of either said they didn't have to or they didn't mention it. But I think they said they didn't. That the only thing they had to do was to pay the rent and maintain the premises. And I added that they had to comply with the rest of the lease. And then there was the provision of, they had put in here a provision that we pretty much gave up all our rights under other rights under FDIC and other, that organization. if this occurred, and I said, I put it back in, we retain all the rights that we would have at the time FDIC took over. And then there were some other word changes that tried to narrow it, but those are the main things.
And then Representative Guttenberg, I apologize if I missed you.
Thank you, Ms. Ben. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Vanstrom, do you think that something triggered this? Is this just a policy across the nation that FDIC is doing, or did something trigger this process?
Oh, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, there is a, this was stemming from the 2008 financial troubles. And there were Frank Dodd Act and those various and sundry things, the laws that were passed from that. And now the FDIC does require this resolution plan, and this particular item of termination of lease was not in it, but Wells Fargo has had a difficult time, just so you can see on the some of the documents from the FDIC, they've had a hard time getting their resolution plan approved. And so that's the only background I know. And they're doing this. They apparently sent this off to like hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of lessors.
If I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So so it becomes a standard practice from the FDIC, and Wells Fargo's been doing this from what you understand, because this is, for me, looking at this, it just seems like a strange document. I'm just concerned that the state's best interest at the end of the day is not diminished.
Council should know, I want you to know, you could do nothing. You don't have to do anything. And you could change this and resubmit it to them. It's up to the council on how they want to deal with their tenant. So I just want you to know, this can't comes. They're asking for it. You don't have to help them out in any way, that way. You don't have to do it.
Mr. Chair. So in some ways, it's a lease reopener. Right. I mean, they're putting this on the table. We have the ability to counter, change it, amend it, or reject it.
Through the chair, you certainly do. Okay. You can put in here whatever you want.
If I may, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm just wondering if there's anything we left out of the original lease that we would like to change, whether we accept it or not.
Oh, well, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I don't mean it's a lease opener in that way, although you could use it that way as a negotiating tool. If you want this, then we do that. But I'm not aware of any particular term any particular provision of the lease. I haven't been told that we really want to change. But what I meant was that you can change this as much as you want, but you could use it as a negotiating tool if you want something else changed in the lease.
I'll leave it at that right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In the Dodd-Frank Act that apparently requires the bank to, or Wells Fargo Corporation, to get this addition to its lease, does the Dodd-Frank Act add specific things that must be in these agreements, or they just say go forth and give you your plan and get your landlord to sign off on whatever plan you come up with?
Through the Chair, Representative Clayman, there is the FDIC specifically says that they should, that they have to have this annual resolution plan, and that they have to, it has to prevent automatic termination, to include terms that would prevent automatic termination and facilitate, what about here, right in the document, facilitate continued provision of services during the resolution. So I don't know what the other large bank holding companies have done.
Well, through the chair, I was asking a slightly different question. Is the Dodd-Frank Act requiring what shows up in this amendment to the lease, or is Wells Fargo basically coming up with this proposed amendment that they think complies with the Dodd-Frank Act?
I don't
Are they looking
believe
at specific areas of the Dodd-Frank Act?
I don't know what the Dodd-Frank Act specifically requires. The FDIC does not lay out a specific language to comply with their requirements. Wells Fargo came up with this.
Have you looked at the Dodd-Frank Act itself to see what these provisions say that are supposed to be done or not supposed to have been done, or are you just looking at this letter?
I reviewed the FDIC requirements, and they were so clear that I thought, okay, this.
In follow-up, does the FDIC require everything that's in this amendment, or again, is this just include things that are not required by the FDIC?
The FDIC, if you look in the second whereas, third whereas, that's what the FDIC requires. So you can, there's nothing specific.
I don't have any questions.
Thank you, Senator Stubin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not so sure if we're not getting wrapped around the axle on this one. I think if Wells Fargo goes broke, we're going to have bigger problems than collecting our lease. So I'm not too worried about it. And you know, we can go back to 08 when everything melted down and see what it looks like. So I'm not really concerned about this because I don't think they're going to go broke anytime soon. In fact, they might go. We might go before them if we're not careful.
Thank you. Senator or Representative Stutes? No. Representative Millett?
Is there any legal liability if we don't respond? I mean, is there a reason that we specifically have to respond, or is it just a requirement for them to notify us?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I don't think that there's any obligation on our part to do anything.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I mean, we could not be concerned, but I can tell you that, I mean, you look on page 2, not only are we on the hook after a resolution event for Wells Fargo, but if FDIC takes control, we're also on the hook for the successor. So we no longer would have control of the tenant themselves. I mean, they would, the successor, I mean, it talks about the assignment, delegation, novation, or transfer of any and all of the tenant's rights and obligations under the lease to the successor. So it's, I would have liked to have seen a white paper from legal counsel. The letter following, the Wells Fargo letter talks about the requirement. I don't know if you all had a chance to review that or not on resolution and recovery. Would have liked to have seen a white paper from our legal counsel that they were had processed the lease and were not concerned, and some of the reasons they were not. Because I can tell you on the fly, this worries me a little bit. I don't think that the potential for Wells Fargo to become insolvent is an immediate problem, obviously, but there could be other combinations of Wells Fargo, someone purchasing Wells Fargo or something that may also put us in a situation where we no longer have control of who our next lessee is as well. And I'm not sure if this goes to that point, but
through the chair, once they go into like bankruptcy or receivership, FDIC, we have very little power after that. So it's not like we can recapture anything if they go into, I mean, we have a few rights, but the FDIC is going to handle it, whether it's putting someone else in there, one of their affiliates, or keeping them in there. I just wanted you to be aware of that. once again, you don't have to do this at all. But just so you understand that once, if they do go into financial distress, we don't have many rights at all. So it's, we just, this is kind of coming from their point of view, what they can do, and facilitating a client, a lessee, helping them work out if work the situation out if they do get into that situation. But it's certainly you don't have to sign this, agree to it, or anything.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my question, I think a lot of committee members are not totally comfortable with this right now. Is this something that we could postpone and maybe get some more information, maybe a white paper Senator Machicki suggested?
Senator, certainly. I don't think this is a time-critical item at this time, so we do have another meeting in a couple of weeks, and we can definitely get some additional information. So maybe in the interest of time, we will table this, do a little bit more work on it, and bring it back before committee. Seems like that is meeting with approval. So thank you, Ms. Bannister. What we will do is we will take a little bit more time to put together a little bit more information, probably, or could come back in the same form, but with a little bit more background or support. So we will move on to our next agenda item. We have some subcommittee items. Actually, what I would like to do before we do that is, Ms. Varney, if you can come forward, and we do have a situation with the current Wells Fargo building, and since we are on that, maybe we can get a quick report of what our obligation responsibilities are regarding the vandalism and what Wells Fargo's responsibility might be. For the record, Ms. Varney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pam Varney. I'm Executive Director of the Legislative Affairs Agency. For the members, just to let you know, we were made aware early yesterday morning that there were a number of graffiti spray paint on the building, on the sidewalk at 1500 West Benson Boulevard, also on some signage, Wells Fargo signage. Oil kills, we kill, divest were what most of the signage said. We did have a police report done. The police came and took pictures and filed a report. Our property manager immediately had someone come, and it was a little difficult on the stone outside, the little pebbles, to try and remove the spray paint. They did their best in kind of a temporary measure because it is cold outside, and they painted with kind of a tan color paint, trying to cover that up. I have been in touch with Jeff Rader. Senator Stevens is aware of Jeff Rader. It was the he's the vice president of Corporate Properties Group with Wells Fargo out of San Francisco, and he is one of the principals that we dealt with on the purchase and the lease with Wells Fargo. And he said we could talk later. I don't know the exact cost yet. I'll get that from our property manager on trying to remedy the removing this graffiti. And that's really as much as I know at this point, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have a question, Senator Stevens?
The vandalism was directed at Wells Fargo and not the legislature, right?
Through the chair. That is correct, Senator Stevens.
And question from me, I guess, for clarification, then, as the building manager, we are responsible for taking care of cleaning up the vandalism. Is that correct, or is that being taken care of by Wells Fargo?
No, that is being taken care of by us, but I am going to have a conversation with Wells Fargo to see what, you know, what they say and whether we can look at maybe them helping us a little bit.
Okay. Thank you, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Varney, do we have exterior cameras that we can identify the culprit of the crime? Do we have anything that we can track on?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, we do not. I'm hoping with our renovation that we will have inside cameras and outside cameras. So we do have armed security, but we do not have cameras of that event.
There's another financial building in the area. Have we checked with them to see if they might have footage? Is it exposed to the side that has the other financial structure?
Through the chair, no, we have not checked on that, but we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Varney? Thank you, Ms. Varney.
Thank you.
So we do have a few other items on the agenda. Next item on the agenda is a late per diem request from Representative Ledoux. And do we have any comments, questions about that before we entertain a motion? The representative is here. I'm not seeing any comments, questions. Senator Stubman?
I move that legislative council approve the late per diem claim for Rep. Ledoux in honor of $771.70.
Thank you. Seeing no objections, that late per diem claim is approved. Next item on the agenda is a moving and travel subcommittee has met and provided recommendations. So, Ms. Geary, there were some small changes to the moving and travel policy that were recommended, incorporated into the moving and travel policy you have before you. And Ms. Geary can discuss some of those changes before we consider the motion. So thank you, Ms. Geary, for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. For the record, my name is Jessica Geary. I'm finance manager for Legislative Affairs Agency. And before you is a memo highlighting the proposed recommended changes to the policy. I was going to go through them kind of one by one, quickly summarize them, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions any of you might have. So the first change is just to sort of clarify what's already happening with the appeal process. If any member disagrees with a decision made on denying certain expenses that are turned into the accounting office, then that particular member can go to the chair and request a review of the full legislative council. So that's the first change. Another change is to reduce currently, and as has been past practice for the last, as long as I'm aware, legislators have been able to send up to 10,000 pounds of household goods and personal effects, and I've never seen that many pounds being shipped. Usually the average is under 3,000, so it seemed like a good idea to reduce that weight. So the proposed change is reducing that to 3,000 pounds of allowable household goods.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious on that. The number of 3,000, is it, how is the weighting skewed? You mentioned that there's virtually no one at 10,000, but is there very many claims above 3,000, or do we get like 90% of the historic or 80 or?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the average that we've seen, we looked at some new members that were bringing all the items for startup, and the biggest bill that we saw was 2,900 pounds. And that was a pretty large amount of furniture, et cetera. Typically speaking, I looked at the past averages, and it was anywhere from 200 pounds to 1,500 pounds of household goods. The highest I've ever seen was 4,400 pounds, and there were some extremely heavy items in that particular shipment, and I have not seen the history there to show why we would need more than 3,000 pounds. And again, there is the exception process if there was a reason why a legislator had to bring more than the allowable weight.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, now you mentioned the average has been below 3,000. That would generally imply that there are folks on the lower end and on the higher end. If you're on the lower end, obviously the change in policy won't affect you, but it would seem to me if you do have legislators with larger families, they might be caught up in that. Why would we want them to have to go through an exception process simply for having a large family?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that's a great question. I think that there's still the flexibility to handle things on a case-by-case basis, but I can honestly tell you that looking through all the past bills, I mean, I think 3,000 is reasonable. I think that that it would be difficult to have an excess of 3,000 pounds.
Senator Stevens?
Could you explain the exception process, how that works. It's a fairly easy process, I understand. Should someone find that they've got a lot of...
Absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the exception process is fairly simple. It's the individual legislator with a specific need contacts the agency, explains the situation. It depends on usually the chair of legislative council has authority to sign off on exceptions or his designee. So it's usually a signature, and then we can go forth.
So Senator Stevens has anticipated that an individual that might want to request an exception, if that exception is denied by the executive director, could appeal to the chair of legislative council. If the chair of legislative council also did not, then there would still be the ability to appeal to the entire Leg Council. And that's not explicitly written, and maybe we need to look at language for that, but that was the intent of how we considered the exception process. Senator Machiki.
I've had a couple members kind of look over at me for tied with the largest family if 3,000 pounds is sufficient, and I can tell you that it certainly is in my case. I mean, I think folks need to be somewhat creative on how they get their household goods back and forth, and this leaves much more room than I would ever need with a family of four, including a dog and a cat on top of this, or a family of six, including a dog and a cat. So I think it's an appropriate number, and if in the rare case that someone is above with the ability to get an exception, I think that is an appropriate way to operate. What I really think it does is it discourages excessive garage sailing on this end for bringing things back home that probably aren't needed and aren't a part of the legislative process.
Ms. Geary, if you can continue.
Okay. The next item. Oh.
I know you're going to go on. The question I do have, though, is a there's two parts of this. The other is the 20 file boxes. I'm more concerned about the office materials going back and forth. Is that 20 of any box or 20 office boxes, and then you still can bring other office items back and forth, or is that kind of the max?
Great question through the chair, Senator Machiki. I could touch on that now, or I could discuss it more in detail when I get to that bullet item, whichever you prefer. Okay, I'll keep moving along because that's how my mind is working. So another thing that's available in the moving policy is storage in the interim during in Juneau. And so right now, legislators can store items in Juneau. We don't have very many members that do that, but this just adds language to clarify the intent of storing items is because it is less expensive than shipping those items back home. The next is to eliminate in-district storage during session. So there's a provision in the policy now that allows for you to actually store items in your hometown during session. And I can't think of a situation where that was necessary. I haven't seen any bills come in. And some of the discussions with the members, they weren't aware of a situation where that might be necessary. So it seemed like a good opportunity to scratch that provision. Moving on to now, I apologize because when I typed up the changes to this policy, I did track changes, which is not always a good friend. And I missed when I went back through, I missed this one particular section on page 2 under household goods and personal effects. There's a paragraph in there that says a pickup by a moving company is allowed only at a legislator's home. So one of the items that we discussed is bolding the word only because the policy is kind of loose right now, and that I just wanted to add a little kind of emphasis on only, and then we were changing a legislator's home to legislator's primary residence, which is kind of the intent of the policy. So I just wanted to make those notes because if that item is approved, then it will be reflected in the changed policy. And I do apologize for that.
Just on that for clarification, have we had multiple pickups requested?
We have had
multiple elected officials?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. We've had legislators that have had kind of long-going relationships with moving companies and have, and it hasn't been up front, but we've discovered kind of after the fact when we get these big moving bills that that they actually made a couple stops or held up a shipment waiting for a certain item. And so I believe that this language just kind of keeps that from, prevents that from happening. Okay, so, oh, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in the reference to what the situation with multiple stops, and I don't want to get into it, but from your perspective, was it abusive? Was it uncalled for? Was it questionable? Was there a justifiable reason by the legislator or?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I don't necessarily want to comment on that, but it is something that could be, it could be abused. So we're trying to tighten up things that leave room for abuse.
Thank you. Continue. I guess what I'd like to say is we do have two more agenda items, or this agenda item and one more, the IT subcommittee report. What we're going to do is, in the interest of time and because we do have House Finance Committee coming in here relatively shortly, we're going to wrap this item up, and then we will postpone the IT subcommittee discussion until our next meeting. So just so everyone knows, and continue, Ms. Geary.
Okay. Thank you. So moving to the consolidated office move section, that particular section of the policy needed quite a bit of work. It was very confusing the way it was written. So we redefined the section just to make it clearer. And in some of the discussions I've had with Tim Banaszak from the IT department and Tina Strong, they're kind of in charge of making the consolidated move happen. And so we had some discussions and also with other members about how right now there's no limit. So a legislator could pack up, 100 file boxes if they wanted to and send them, and they fill the hallways. And so the question was, what's a reasonable amount? So we looked through kind of each office and the history of how many boxes were sent, and I'm sure there's some legislators with committees that might need more file boxes and different things like that. But 20 was a good average. We saw, if we averaged it out, it was anywhere from 15 to 20 boxes per legislator. So there was a suggestion just to limit it in the policy that might be a good place to put it, and the agency does provide boxes,
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, and I don't mean to slow things up, but folks who do have maybe more than 20 boxes, is there, does the print shop offer scanning assistance?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the print shop does offer scanning, so that's something that's certainly an option, and we've had legislators take advantage of that, or you can scan and archive and different things like that. Okay. Moving on. So this is where we get into a little more clarifying language and trying to keep certain things from happening. There's a section in there about extra car parts and tools, et cetera. It's kind of... It should be obvious that that's only allowed if a legislator has a vehicle in Juneau, but adding that language just makes it very, very clear that unless you have a vehicle in Juneau, you cannot bring car parts and different things like that to Juneau and back to district afterwards.
Building cars with car parts.
Correct, yes. And then so there's a section on page 3 of the policy, items that may not be shipped. So some of these items are very, very clear. But we thought we could add a couple little points in there that would make it a little more clear. So the first proposed bullet point to add is, articles that are not reasonable and necessary to have in order to conduct legislative business. That's one bullet point. The next bullet point is already there. We're just expanding on it. So we have cordwood, firewood, or building materials. Those are not allowed items. And then adding, including heavy tools, heavy equipment, and other related items to the bullet point. And then skipping down the third bullet point we've made a change to is after articles acquired after the effective date of adjournment of the legislative session or articles not used in the capital city during the session. So let me give an example of that. An item that that was purchased in Juneau, not used in Juneau, simply to take back home with you at the end of session. So that would not be an allowable item. Any questions? Okay. All right. And then our very last item is I would like to call a housekeeping item. Right now, a vehicle is defined as an automobile, snowmobile, or motorcycle. I can't see a legislative purpose for needing a snowmobile in Juneau during these times, and so it seemed like a good opportunity to strike that language. That's everything. I'd be happy to answer any more questions.
Question, Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank Jessica for doing this. I know it's been a long process, but the idea, of course, was to bring everything up to date so we eliminate snowmobiles. makes a lot of sense, but also to reduce the cost. And I know that's going to be impossible for us to figure out how much we have reduced, but I think this will have a substantial impact on the bottom line. And thank you, Jessica. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments about the update to the moving and travel policy? Senator Majigi.
No, again, I like all the changes to the personal movement back and forth. I'm just a little bit concerned on the office move. I mean, I think it's important to the public hear the difference, right? I mean, those are your tools of the trade here going back and forth in your office. A little different, so I hope there's some flexibility if you're and we have largely an electronic office, but I can see years when you might have more than 20. I appreciate that flexibility. Just one comment on the way the vehicles were shipped this year. I mean, we actually don't ship anything else. But when you open the door to my wife's vehicle when we arrive, you want to be really careful. It's very creatively packed. This year, the way that we did the vehicle transportation, you didn't have that option, so it was more challenging. So when we don't have the Cross Gulf ferries, that's just something for LAA to be aware of, that it's more challenging on larger families. But we made it work.
Thank you. Senator Stebbins.
I would support Senator Majicki's endeavor to increase the appropriation for the Marine Highway for the Cross Gulf ferry.
Representative Ortiz.
I'll just second that. Thank you.
Thank you. And it doesn't look like we have any other questions. Let's go ahead and Senator Stebbins, motion.
Awesome. I move that Legislative Council approve the recommended changes to the Legislative Council moving and travel policy.
Seeing no objections to the moving and travel policy as presented, that is adopted. And then we will postpone the IT subcommittee recommendations. And we will be working on having another meeting before the end of our time here in Juneau. And with that, thank you all for your time this early in the morning, and we are adjourned at 8:34 p.m. or 8:34 a.m.